Football, 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 talking more and more football. Gotta love it, folks. We're back here on Sports Talk, getting into some of the college scene with college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Podcast Network now, Joe DeLeon. Joe, how you been?
Good. Last night was a nice little teaser for what's going to be an exciting weekend of football. I'm excited. We're finally back.
Yeah, no, tonight we've got a matchup, too, with Oklahoma Temple. I don't know how exciting that is, though.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
Right.
I'm doubting that it's going to be close, but I'll probably watch that.
Looking up, obviously, everybody here in Louisiana, we're pretty stoked about the LSU-USC matchup coming on Sunday, even though it's a little strange, obviously, Sunday, but we'll take it. Obviously, a primetime matchup coming down in Las Vegas. Looking at this LSU team going into the season, I think there is no bigger question than, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball. They can't be worse than last year, can they, Joe?
Well, I seriously don't think that they're going to take any step back. I think there's only, as you're saying, there's only one direction for them to go, which is up. And I honestly attribute a lot of their issues from last season to poor coaching. I know that it's kind of like a blanket statement to throw out there when your defense is as bad as LSU's was. But there are athletes in LSU's secondary that felt like they were misused. I think that Blake Baker was a tremendously gifted defensive coordinator for Missouri last year, who turned a group of guys that were quality athletes into some of the best in the SEC. And I think there's room for that with this LSU secondary. Where I do have some concern is the interior of the defensive line, which is something that I think everybody is aware that LSU wasn't super aggressive in the transfer portal in trying to bring in replacements for the three guys that they put out for the NFL. If they have any issues this year, it's going to be against teams that run the ball up the middle aggressively, but I think that at the very least, the secondary is going to take a nice leap forward under Blake Baker.
Yeah, I am curious. What is your take on the transfer portal in that way? Because I kind of feel like Brian Kelly, to some extent, has it right in the sense that you don't want to be the team that tries to bring in key pieces every year in the transfer portal, because that's unsustainable. You do want to recruit and develop to some extent, but it has to be kind of a balance. I'm just curious, where do you see that this year? Because I think there are different schools of thought, no pun intended, in terms of how to build your roster in that way.
Yeah, and I think that Florida State's a really perfect example of that, because last year we were commending them for the way that they used the transfer portal to their advantage to go and find guys like Jared Verse, who had been there for his second year last year and turned out to be a superstar level player. But we're seeing this year the guys that they have in the interior, they brought in Marvin Jones, Farmer, who I believe was a transfer portal guy as well. They don't really have the presence in their interior that one would hope Florida State to have after some of the roster turnover that they went through last offseason. So I completely agree with that sentiment. Your recruiting, especially along the offensive and defensive lines, has to be through the high school ranks. You need to have really good coaching and development at those positions in order to take that next step. You can go and find various pieces to fill small holes here and there to bolster your roster, but the only way that you're going to get to that national championship standard, like we see with Georgia and teams like Alabama and what Michigan had last year, is by keeping guys, using NIL to keep guys within the program and developing them and helping them grow.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's like, I feel like if you're looking at the transfer portal, if you don't feel like you're a contending group, if you can't develop a contending group underneath the transfers that you put on top of that to maybe get yourself over the top, then you don't have a program to begin with. I think that's kind of what Colorado was dealing with last year, where it's like, you can attract all this top-tier talent, but where was that kind of bedrock of college talent, top-end college talent? Because, like, you can have two top options. You can have Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, but if the underlying talent level isn't there, then you don't really have much to work on.
Yeah, we saw that last night. That showed up, this whole roster turnover issue and heavy transfer portalness for Colorado. It was really starting to show up, especially with their offensive line. I think their offensive line looked improved, but the interior was just getting smoked by a North Dakota State defensive line that isn't exactly producing premier NFL talent in the interior of their D-line. They were getting by off of some really easy stunts and some really just simple five-man pressures that they were sending. That, to me, shows that they don't have the chemistry right now because it's such a brand new group. And I also wonder if the guys that they brought in are good enough to be at least at the bare minimum quality starters for Colorado. But the more I think that the transfer portal is going, like the longer that it's around, we're going to see more and more examples of these teams that live and die by the portal. And there's going to be some success stories. Like I think Miami this year could be a success story, and we're going to see so many failures that are going to make us really rethink if that's the best way to go about it.
When you look at this LSU-USC matchup too, both quarterbacks replacing Heisman Trophy winners. For folks like LSU fans want to know more about this kid, Miller Moss, what should we know about the new quarterback for the Trojans, although he is a senior going into this matchup against LSU?
Yeah, for some reason I feel like it's like forgotten in this whole turnover because of Caleb Williams and how premier of a big name he was, that he was still a decently highly recruited kid. He was a high four-star. He was not a top quarterback in his class, but still highly recruited. He fits within the system of what Lincoln Riley's looking for, which is pinpoint accuracy, quick decision-making. We saw that in the bowl game. But I will point out, what he's going to do in this game, it's a bit of a question mark. It's an enigma. We don't totally know how he's going to play. That bowl game was against Louisville backups in a situation where it didn't really matter who won. So we don't know for sure if Miller Moss is going to be the guy that threw for six touchdowns last December. He's still, though, very gifted. It seems like he's a very smart kid, and he's been there for so long that he's experienced in the system. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to make a lot of mistakes. What's really going to help him, because this system is so built on speedy, athletic receivers, that receiving group that last year was strong is getting older and more developed. Zachariah Branch, I think, is somebody to pay close attention to in this matchup. If the LSU secondary maybe isn't as improved as we're hoping for, he could end up popping off for a big game.
Looking at the LSU run game, it's going to be expected to be ground and pound for this squad this year. And you look at the offensive line, obviously, being the strength of the squad. But what's your take on this group of Tigers running back going into this season?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this grouping, especially Caleb Jackson, who I think is going to burst onto the scene and be a premier back if he lives up to the hype. The plays that he had in very small sample sizes were really exciting. And I feel like this running back room is kind of built like the running back rooms that Brian Kelly had when he was at Notre Dame, which was a couple different styles and then an ability to rush between the tackles, rush ground and pound like you're talking about. You're not going to have a Jaden Daniels-type athlete back there, so you're going to need to have a more diverse offensive approach. And you don't have Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers. You can't rely on those guys to be open easily deep down the field. So they're going to need to rely on the running game.
Yeah, so, this is kind of more vague. Steve goes to LSU, I go vague. But, with the expanded playoff this year, I am curious, it feels like a team like Florida State, for example, you lose to Georgia Tech, it would almost seem like their season's over. Like, they don't have a chance. Well, in the sense of at least getting to the college football playoff, once you lose to Georgia Tech in the opener, it almost feels like impossible for you to get your way back into that top four. Now that it's 12, it feels like that opens up things immensely in terms of you could actually turn your season around after losing a game like that. How do you feel like that's going to be the case? Is it almost like you open up possibilities across the landscape that just didn't exist before? And how do you see certain teams kind of handling that?
Yeah, and I think that's going to create a lot of contention at the end of the season when we're picking those final spots, because there's going to be some late surging teams that have some silly losses on the earlier part of their schedule that we're going to point to and be like, hey, what the heck? Why is this team suddenly, why are we forgetting about this? It's something that we've never had to do before. There's going to be two lost teams, maybe even three lost teams that are vying for those final spots in the playoff. And I think it's going to happen less for the weaker Power Four conferences, that being the ACC and the Big 12. I think with the SEC and with the Big 10, we're going to have a lot of those debates of, hey, is this 9-3 team worth putting in over this 10-2 team? And that's certainly going to cause a lot of debating. But in line with the Florida State aspect of things, I almost even look at the Big 12, where we're going to have probably a two-loss Big 12 champion potentially that goes on to win the conference and has a bye. That also, I think, is going to create a lot of frustration from fans. They're going to be like, well, this team's clearly not as good as the other top three seeded teams. Why do they deserve to have the bye that they do? There's just so many different angles. When you had four teams, it was cut and dry. There were still debates on who ended up getting in those last spots like we saw this past year. But there's so many different angles to debate this, and especially how things are going to be ranked. It just opens things up for so many more conversations, which it's a good thing for us as media members that we have more to talk about, but I'm sure will lead to a lot of frustration from some fans.
Talking with Joe DeLeon, college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Podcast Network. And Joe, obviously tomorrow we wake up, we get number one ranked Georgia taking on number 14 Clemson right away. But what are some of the other games, at least for you, that you're looking forward to that could be entertaining matchups in the first Saturday of college football?
Yeah, the first one that I think has the most intrigue for it for the storylines is Miami versus Florida in Gainesville, because both these teams, both these coaches need to get this win. They need to win big this year. And Billy Napier doesn't need to go on to win the SEC, but he needs to get a win against a rival at home. He needs to prove that, hey, I'm still putting a little bit of life into this program. We're not dead yet. Maybe win seven games. He can buy himself a tiny bit more time. If they lose at home, oh, there is going to be so much pressure on his head because of the expectation that they should beat a team like Miami when they're hosting them. Miami, on the other hand, this should be an expectation that they win, because this is the year that Florida State's weakened and that they're going to go on and win the ACC. You can't stumble in week one. Maybe you could against an out-of-conference opponent, but you need every bit of momentum that you have, especially because their schedule is on the lighter side for ranked opponents that they're going to see. The other game that's not getting as much love, I feel like, because that Clemson-Georgia matchup is West Virginia versus Penn State. It was popping. It seemed like it was pretty crazy for the Pat McAfee show and for classes being canceled. Everybody's pretty amped up in Morgantown, and people really undermine seemingly that is a tough place to win. Penn State is a team that lost a lot, especially defensively. Two completely new coordinators. That could be maybe an upset watch type game, and that's why I'm circling that one to be an entertaining one to keep up with.
Looking at now, going to go to your NFL draft analyst hat. With the Saints picking Taliese Fuaga in round one of this year's draft, what was your take when they decided to move him from right tackle now to left tackle this year? Big deal or not so much?
I want to see how comfortable he ends up getting. I think that when you've got good football players and you need to ask them to step up in any way possible, sometimes you have to ask them to do things that they're not comfortable with.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest, I hate it. This isn't a situation where you've got a swing tackle who's played multiple spots. Like Andrew Thomas, when he was at Georgia, is the first guy that comes to mind. Like, he played some left and right tackle, so if he had to play right tackle early on in his career, it wasn't really that big of a deal. But Fuaga is tried and true. He is a right tackle. He has the mentality of a right tackle. He's got the build of a right tackle. He's downhill. He's going to maul you. He's a run-blocking first guy who's great in pass protection. It almost feels like a square peg in a round hole. Fuaga, I would have put him at guard or at right tackle before I would have put him at left tackle. And it just kind of chalks up to the Saints' offensive line situation not being great, and that they need their best players to play at the best positions. I just hope that Fuaga, being as good of an athlete as he is, it doesn't slow him down. And maybe there's an ability for them to bring in a true left tackle and bump him back to right tackle, and things could really get back in a real form from there.
Yeah, just kind of mining that NFL draft hat a little bit more. So I think everyone is probably going to bet on Caleb Williams to win Rookie of the Year. It's a smart play. You could also probably go Jaden Daniels, whatever. If you had a dark horse rookie who could factor into that offensive Rookie of the Year equation, who would it be?
I don't know if I'd consider him to be a dark horse, but you just mentioned Caleb Williams. I think that Roma Dunze could have potentially a ridiculous season. And that would require for Caleb Williams to have a big year too. But if there's some way for him to box out Caleb Williams, I think Roma Dunze is going to have a huge year because of the other receivers around him that are going to elevate him, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. I think DJ Moore is going to take most of the targets, but Keenan Allen's just going to distract attention away from Roma Dunze, and I think he's going to have plenty of opportunities to shine. And then if I'm going to throw out an unexpected running back play, Trey Benson, I think that he landed in a great situation to have a very productive rookie season with the Cardinals. Seems like their run game has been looking for some sort of a spark, and the former Florida State running back is a home run waiting to happen and could have some really huge plays for the Cardinals.
Joe, always great stuff. Appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you soon. Enjoy all the ball going on now.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe DeLeon, college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Podcast Network. You can check out all his work there.